Hello, welcome to Pod Catalyst. I'm Peter Finn, Executive Director at IBC, or International Association of Business Communicators. And for this interview, I got a chance to speak with Alex Seveny, who is a assistant professor of communication studies and communications management at McMaster University, where he co-founded the communication studies program and served as the director of the Master of Communications Management program. In addition to that, he is editor-in-chief of the Journal of Professional Communication and is active as a volunteer in the Canadian Public Relations Society, where he has served as the president of the Hamilton chapter and is currently serving as national chief accreditation examiner. He's also an active academic and market researcher in the area of communications, and we certainly discussed that a bit. He runs the McMaster Communications Metrics Research Lab at McMaster. He's also an occasional consultant in the area of communications management and measurement. And so Alex and I talked a good deal about generative artificial intelligence. He is a fount of knowledge and insight. I really enjoyed the discussion. I think you will too. Well, Alex, thanks for speaking with me today. Maybe just to like get things kicked off, tell us a little bit about yourself, your work at McMaster University, your consulting practice.
Sure. Yeah, my name is Alex Seveny. I'm a professor at McMaster University. I teach communications management as well as communication studies. It's communication studies mostly at the undergrad level. I have been involved in our Master of Communications Management program, which is a program for professionals, which they can do in a hybrid fashion while they work full time, and served as director of that program for 8 years. As well, I've been a professor there since the beginning, and I teach our data science and analytics course, where we talk about measurement and value for public relations and how to define it, how to measure it, how to track it, how to motivate employee behavior, and other interesting things that you can do with data. And most recently, I've worked a lot on the concept of AI, augmented reality, virtual reality, which is going to culminate in a book that is going to come out in the next, hopefully next 6 months to a year, which I'm very excited about, with my co-author, Martin Waxman, which some people who listen to this podcast may have heard him speak on LinkedIn or other places. He's a very public figure in that area of AI and PR. And yes, I'm a consultant as well outside the university. I'm a strategic consultant. So I help with campaign structure. I've worked a lot in Canadian politics at all levels of Canadian politics. And I also have been an advisor, particularly in the tech area, tech sector, helping executives and in established companies as well as in startups kind of frame their messaging. And we also work on their own presentation skills to help pitch investors and to help communicate effectively to employees. Last piece is government. I've worked a lot with government, particularly at the municipal and provincial level here, which is similar to the city or state level in the United States. And there, again, same thing about data-driven communication strategy and reaching your publics, knowing your audience.
And how did you, what was your path to the AI, you know, and its impact on PR and some of these other things? I mean, has your background always been in PR?
You know what? Interestingly, my studies were not in public relations. I studied linguistics. In my undergrad, I did kind of general humanities, I would say, with the university I went to allowed you to have quite a liberal arts approach, which is kind of unique in Canada. It's York University in Toronto. And so I did a whole blend of things with a little bit of psychology, a lot of linguistics, some art history, some statistics as well. So that was that kind of led me towards more theoretical linguistics, which I did in my master's, French linguistics, and then French is my first language. And then my PhD was in what's now called, I guess, computational linguistics, which is really pulling meaning out of texts using software and computers. And that has always informed a love for technology and love for, I'm a real techno-utopianist, although I do understand that there are major downsides to technology, right? Obviously, and major ethical challenges. But I do believe that technology is heavily linked to progress and that progress is good. So how did I get into public relations? Actually, interestingly, through politics, I was invited to help on a campaign. I ran the campaign. We kind of won against all. I ran the communications for the campaign, I should say. We won against some heavy odds and people thought that was great. So So I started focusing in on the political communication. On the marketing comm side, I had always worked kind of in, even as a teenager, I'd done little projects for local companies in design, translation, as well as publicity. And it was just a passion of mine, which developed into a practice. So that's kind of how it came together. When I when I became a professor at McMaster University, I helped the founding of our communication studies program. And that really got me into away from linguistics and much more towards communications. And so at first I focused a lot on interpersonal and kind of speech comms. And then after I met my colleague and a friend and mentor, Dr. Terry Flynn, who is the founder of the communication as management program at McMaster, I really got heavily into public relations, developed a real passion and a love for public relations and marketing communications.
When just kind of talk more about, you know, your focus on technology and specifically AI, because you'll be speaking about that at the World Conference in Toronto this year. What excites you about AI and AI generated content?
I think public relations has always had a scaling problem, you know, where it's been difficult to build value on a larger scale than what can be delivered by an individual, by a human. And I think what artificial intelligence, augmented reality, virtual reality, other tech that are emerging now and starting to shape the way we imagine our society and our culture and ourselves as individuals, I think all that is also allowing the possibility of scaling PR. And that's, I think that's been a real impediment towards the industry's growth and unlocking value in the industry. And I think that judicious and thoughtful use of artificial agents could help PR scale, could also help us become a lot more strategic as a profession, which really interests me, because I think that public relations is a highly strategic function. I think that it's the conscience of an organization. I think it's the only part of many companies, government offices, not-for-profits that has a whole organization perspective in a kind of holistic way that includes employee experience, customer experience, you know, if you're in not-for-profit donor experience or client experience, you know, whatever. And that's underappreciated, right? Because it was very difficult to quantify. It was very difficult to make a link to business indicators because it's hard to put a number on that, right? Yeah. And now that we're moving to this world of artificial agents, of augmented reality, of digital reality, with a new generation of people who are really comfortable with being digital in a way that goes well beyond, you know, I'm 49 years old and I've always thought of myself as a digital forward person. But the way people who are in their teens or in their early 20s, particularly the people that are in their teens who grew up with smartphones, live, digital life is as real or as important to them as physical life, right? So, and that's trackable and it's measurable, and those relationships can be quantified and those really, and in an ethical way and in a way that's respectful, but nonetheless quantified, right? Yeah. And that opens up a whole new dimension for showing and proving the strategic value that our profession adds.
Yeah. Well, I guess it, you know, sort of the natural next question is, you know, what worries you about, you know, sort of the conversely, what, you know, where do you see the downside or the concern over AI?
You know, that is a very good question. And it's one that I ask myself all the time, because it's so easy to get caught up in the hype. It's so easy to play with a new tool and imagine all of the possibilities that you would use it for. And, you know, assuming you're a person of good faith and goodwill, you think of the 101 ways this could improve your life and the life of your clients or the life of your students or whatever. What one always has to do is cast one's mind into a darker place and ask yourself, well, what would someone who's less well-intentioned, right? Or who perhaps has less of an ethical perspective on things do? And I think that's the challenge, because everyone starts from a good place with technology, and then it's a slippery slope towards unethical practice. And it's also because a lot of times these technologies are black boxes, right? People don't necessarily know what goes into building a chatbot or what goes into an artificial agent. How is that artificial agent trained? Even let's say we're in the very near future, we're all probably going to have, well, most of us will have artificial assistants, mm-hmm. right? people who will conduct the menial tasks of, like, I went to the dentist today, negotiating that timing of my appointment and the details of that appointment, rather than me doing it, artificial assistant will do it. But, you know, how is that bot trained? How is its identity in terms of its cultural and gender and other facets of its identity represented, you know? And finally, how is it representing me?
Yeah.
So, and those are questions that are very difficult for a lot of people because they're technical, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to start getting into the idea of like a training set and also the design of the personality of the character, right? Mm-hmm. And those aspects that, you know, it's kind of like reading the manual. You know, I don't think people like reading the manual when they buy a new appliance, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And I think when it comes to deploying a chatbot and an artificial assistant, an augmented reality component to your brand experience or whatever, I think reading the manual is going to be really key. Yeah.
So I worked before IBC as the executive director. I was an executive for an engineering association. And we would have panels that would discuss AI and, you know, kind of some of the questions that we're addressing today. But one of the things that would come up is we would talk about kind of the AI being a reflection of the designer or the person that's building it in terms of their biases and their values. And I was just curious to get your perspective on that. I mean, have you seen that kind of play out in a way that's been dangerous? Or I was just curious to get your thoughts on that.
I've certainly seen it play out, you know, having been witness to the beginnings, or I shouldn't say the beginnings, but the early days of AI during the AI winter, interestingly, was when I was doing my PhD. I think that quite often academics or engineers or people who work in the tech industry work with what's at hand, right? So if you need to build a knowledge base of world knowledge so that your AI can have a set of understandings of the world on which it can base its inferences, on which it can base its decision-making, its logic, if you will, it's easiest to just think of yourself. You know. So for example, I remember in the 90s, when I was doing my PhD, I knew a lot of people who worked in AI, and quite often the artificial agents they would design would resemble them, right? You know, or the companies they would start up would have a lot of the concerns that they would have. So, I remember one person in particular who was working on an issue of prediction in terms of human thinking around, I think it was taxation. I could be wrong, but it was basically all of his experiences with with starting a business and you know, living in the world. And he was a fairly typical kind of upper middle class Canadian, French Canadian white guy, I guess, if you would put it that way.
Yeah.
And you know, at the time, nobody thought of that because these were pet projects. They were funded research either by companies or by government. And I don't think that people were consciously introducing bias. I think it was just convenience, right? And mm-hmm. I think that attitude has persisted because those projects didn't have enormous reach beyond scientific experiments, beyond AI laboratories or linguistics laboratories or whatever. But now that in the last, I would say 10 to 15 years, that artificial intelligence has started to be used on an industrial scale in human applications, in courtrooms, inform what's presented to people on social and digital media, like in terms of prompts, you know, what is suggested to you to watch on YouTube or on Netflix or whatever, all of a sudden that convenient and comfortable and easy access data set that probably reflected the life and the biases of the people who built it probably came from a very narrow band of gender and probably a selection of ethnicities and racial backgrounds, if you will. Probably quite narrow, I would guess. I don't know the specific statistics, but I would guess that it's narrow. I think that the need for introducing cultural understanding, the need for introducing a concept of diversity, the need for introducing different ways of living that people have and the different ways of experiencing the world is fundamental because AI has gone beyond a cool tool for a male executive in the tech industry, right, to now something that's affecting the lives of almost everyone in some kind of way, right? Because we all interact. One of our first points of interaction with most brands is going to be a chatbot very soon, right? Mm-hmm. If it isn't already. and with many organizations. And the way that chatbot interacts with a client, first of all, if it isn't respectful, it's terrible from an ethical perspective because that person could feel demeaned or diminished, and which is probably the opposite of what your brand is trying to achieve. But also it's bad for business, right? Because of that, if people don't feel welcome, if they don't feel a sense of belonging, then they're going to leave.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned ethics. Do you think that there has been enough focus on the ethics of this, that it's the technology is outpacing the sort of ethical considerations? And probably also as an extension of that, like, is there enough dialogue, you think, you know, like, let's say within the Canadian government or the US government or other governments that, you know, kind of developing a policy mindset about some of these things?
Yeah, that's a complicated question, right? Because I think that the answer is, given today's state of affairs, no, right? There not enough attention has been paid, which is having knock-on effects now, right? Yeah. Because so many of the early models and the training data sets and other artifacts from early AI were heavily slanted, particularly towards men, mm-hmm. right? And particularly men from a certain socioeconomic class and education, level of education. I mean, there was a certain level of, I would say, cultural and racial diversity in there, because that, as Silicon Valley and other tech centers are actually quite ethnoculturally diverse, right? In some ways, right? But it gender-wise, it's men,
yeah. right?
And it's rich, or at least well-to-do men who are very highly educated. And I think that the fact that that's the basis is pretty problematic, right? Because I think a lot of the fundamental assumptions that go into some of the models that are being deployed or used are leaving from a, you know, the kernel of the training set is not very diverse, right? It doesn't reflect the diversity of human experience. So that's not good. I don't think that's necessarily anybody's fault. I think it's just, it's a condition of our situation, right? So I'm not blaming engineers. I'm not blaming the tech industry. However, now is the time to change, right? And now is the time to introduce cultural understanding of the diversity of the human condition, the diversity of human experience. But here's the interesting and amazing opportunity for our profession.
Yep.
Because there is nobody better positioned in an organization or as a consultant or as simply a creative professional to aid engineers and data scientists and computer software programmers in building ethical, inclusive, humanistic, friendly AI, people-friendly AI, than us, than communicators, because we get it. We think about the ethical concerns all the time. We think about the effects on diverse populations because we interact with them, yep. right? And we are also, in general, as a profession, high empathy, right? We are very focused on the needs and the feelings of our audiences, and we understand them. And we have the language, the vocabulary, and the professional stature to communicate about these very difficult topics. It's hard to talk about people's feelings. It's hard to talk about an empathic perspective. It's hard to talk about a feeling of belonging or cultural difference. It makes people profoundly uncomfortable, particularly people for whom they don't have that vocabulary. And, yep. and quite often technical people don't, right? It's yep. just not their, it's not their area of expertise. So it's a huge opportunity for our profession. But from my perspective, what that means is, you know, you have to build bridges with the tech people, the engineers, the data scientists, the programmers who are linguists or whoever, yep. or cognitive scientists, whoever that are putting the AI tools together for your organization. And to be able to communicate with them, because it really is kind of two worlds colliding, very different worlds. Like, on the one hand, our world is empathy, compassion, understanding, building belonging, building a reputation. Mm-hmm. Their world tends to be quite utilitarian. Mm-hmm. Right? How can I save resources? How can I make this project as efficient as possible? How can I make the chatbot use as few resources, you know, as little electricity is used as possible, as little computer time, et cetera, et cetera. So I think what it's incumbent on communicators to gain an understanding of the tech world and its culture, right? So that you can communicate with them and be that guide. And in an organization, that will elevate the practice, because yeah. here you are delivering mission critical knowledge and insight.
So a couple of questions dovetail on that. I think one in particular is, do you think, you know, as a university professor, are students within the communication programs, undergraduate, graduate, I mean, are they getting exposure to this? And, you know, are you finding this to be more part of, you know, the, I guess, what would be the standard curricula at various universities? I mean, is there enough focus on this? So the next generation of communicators, and even the current group of communicators of the community, are getting guidance on this or getting enough information, or, you know, on how to, you know, as you say, build these bridges and how to bring that ethical and empathetic lens?
I think the short answer is what I see is that people would like to, but we're not there yet.
Right? Yeah.
I sat on this really interesting panel a year ago at the IPR Bridge conference, where it was about how, you know, are we teaching data right to students? And it was interesting because I think the folks on that panel were incredibly good teachers and doing their best to work, I include myself in this area, to work data literacy, tech culture literacy, and whatnot into the curriculum. The problem is, I think a lot of our students are at a slight disadvantage because whereas marketing programs are often housed in schools of business, in commerce programs or in business administration programs, communications programs tend to be in journalism schools, in comms schools, or in the humanities, sometimes in the social sciences, depending on the school, depending on the orientation, whether it's more speech comms or whether it's more critical or whatever, right? So if you're coming from a marcoms background, marketing, you're taking these other courses and it's part of your daily lingo. You know, you're hearing about finance and accounting and numbers and supply chain, this other stuff that you would take in your business degree. If you're coming from a humanistic, journalistic, or a social science, qualitative social science background, it's not part of your universe, right? You don't think of the world in terms of money and numbers and quantification the way a marketer would coming out of a Bachelor of Business Administration or a Bachelor of Commerce. And so we have a fear of numbers kind of among the students quite often, and also a fundamental lack of familiarity with data and the concept of data, technology. It's other, right? It's something you talk about, but you don't necessarily know any of the workings of. That's a problem. And if I think it's, to me, it's a fundamental question of having to bring more of the commerce curriculum into communications and earlier so that students understand that while the humanistic skills are extremely important and are at the foundation of our success as a profession, that empathy, that compassion, that understanding of the human experience, that's fundamental, understanding culture, pop culture, traditional culture, et cetera. But you also have to know this, the language of business, and the language of business is numbers, right? So I think that our biggest hurdle is that, right? It's building a culture of quantification of numbers and having our students be comfortable with the concept of business objectives and also understanding how businesses measure success and what it means to have to, like what the chief operating officer does, what the chief financial officer does, right? Because it's, you know, those are the technical languages that drive the organization, right? So that's our real problem, is that. And it's hard, it's tough, because I think our students instinctively get the ethical concerns, right? Because they have such a strong understanding of and cultural sensitivity towards things like racial profiling or gender bias or other human factors like that, right? But I don't necessarily think that they know how to communicate that effectively to the tech side or even for that matter to the commerce or business administration side yet. So therein lies the rub from my perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And my other question too is just, you know, kind of more around the workforce, but, you know, you had mentioned earlier, like there being these AI assistants for, you know, the dentist and so on and so forth. Just curious to get your thoughts on, like, you know, in terms of replacing the work of communicators or, you know, a portion thereof, and what that future kind of looks like. Does it create more opportunities for the communicator so they're maybe not, you know, this other work is picked up by some AI function, or will it reduce the workforce and, you know, essentially replace some of what communicators have traditionally done for an organization?
Yeah, I think I see a positive and a negative there, right? I think the positive is that it will enable the profession to get more done faster, right? Yep. And which will enable us to scale even in our day-to-day tasks. So for example, as a Francophone, French is my first language, the French Canadian, I should say, I do a lot of translation for friends and family. Whoever asks, I'm the resident translator. And what used to take me a long time now takes about 80% less time because of translation assistant and grammar checking tools. So for English, French, or English, Spanish, tools like Google Translate do about 80% of the work. I mean, I know about French more than anything. So, I mean, I'd say 80, maybe even more than 80% of the work is done by Google Translate. And then I tweak, I make the language contextual. I make sure it's reflective of the person for whom I'm doing the translation, et cetera, right? And I kind of see, particularly for a lot of the, what we call, I think, low attention writing, which is, you know, if you think about it, it's kind of the grind of public relations and marcoms, which is the daily production of things like press releases, media availabilities, you know, other sort of formulaic writing. I think that things like ChatGPT are as an example, but there are many others. So, I mean, this technology has actually been around for several years. It's just that that particular example blew up in the media, so everybody's familiar with it. So it's become a kind of a shorthand for all of the good work that's been done by many startups and companies in the AI, generative AI space. But you know, people do use it as a kind of shorthand. So ChatGPT, I think it'll do the first pass. I mean, it's not there right now yet. I would be very cautious about using these tools now. They're not ready. And they often will insert falsehoods into the prose that they're writing, or, you know, there'll be non sequiturs or other things. So my caution to our profession would be, don't get carried away now with using these tools. Just like Google Translate at the beginning was not very good, but now it's great. And quite frankly, I think in a very short time span, generative AI is going to be great. And then once it's great, and once it's really customizable, and once the fact checking is much improved, then it could very well do 80% of the sort of the grind of the writing task, you know, where the empty page, blank page syndrome, as people call it, right? You know, yep. And then you as a communicator do the edit and add color, add your narrative elements, your tropes, all of the things that your brand needs to be effective and to communicate to your audiences, to be familiar to your audiences. So to me, what that will do is I think it will take away some of that quote unquote low attention writing, or, you know, as people might prosaically call it, sort of grind writing, you yep. know, the daily grind, but it'll actually elevate the practice because people like communicators, consultants, people who work in corporate shops or in government shops or whatever, will have more time to think and to put together strategic prose, to build better narrative sequences, to have maybe more, maybe less writing, but have it be really on point and colorfully and intelligently tell the brand story in maybe ways that we just don't have time for right now. So I teach in this communications management master's program, which is for people who are already fairly experienced. They have 8 to 12 years. And one of the things they come back at me with all the time, because we talk a lot about strategy in the program, is no time for strategy. And I think that what generative AI is going to allow is a lot more time for strategy. That's the good part. The negative part is that the people that are going to be mostly replaced by this, in my humble opinion, are going to be people who are entry level in the profession.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was wondering. I mean, and then how do you grow those people into the, you know, the experienced people? Yeah.
That's the problem, right? Yeah. How do you, I mean, when I started in this, in my case, it was as a consultant, but it was the same. It was ground up. Like you start you write things and people who are more experienced than you say, it could be better. and then you improve. And over time, you gain a strategic understanding. You're like, oh, okay, I get this concept of voice, right? Brand voice. But it takes time and it takes a lot of writing, right? But before you get there. And what I fear is, and I think it's similar and yet not similar to the technical professions, if you don't have all that time practicing writing, that grindy, boring, workaday writing of press releases, news releases, all that stuff, how are you going to gain those, you know, to use that sort of cliche, the 10,000 hours or whatever it is, to become someone who gets how to put a brand's voice into words and pictures, right? That really worries me. You know, people say, oh, but look at engineers. They're okay. They don't use, they don't do arithmetic anymore. They don't use slide rules. Yeah, but arithmetic doesn't require in-depth insight or creativity in the same way that writing does. So I think that putting together a grammatical sentence would be the equivalent of what the engineer has replaced because, you know, they no longer use the slide rule. They no longer use the arithmetic. Necessarily, calculator does faster and better, but all of the strategic thinking is still the engineer, right? They still use the formula to solve the problem of how to build
tools.
Right. And I feel the generative AI may replace too much of that strategic thinking, and it could leave a real training gap for juniors. So, not for experienced people. For experienced people, it's a boon, right? How are you going to get people to become experienced?
That's very interesting. I'm sure, you know, a lot of the folks that are listening to this are, you know, that's something that they've been thinking about as well. But, you know, are there other trends that you think that, you know, from a communicator perspective for the profession that they should keep an eye on over the next 2 years? I know you're saying that, you know, the technology is not quite where it needs to be, but I mean, but also there's other considerations that, you know, kind of come to mind.
Yes. Two things, right? One is augmented reality, right? Mm-hmm. This is the great overlooked massive opportunity for public relations, right? And I think that augmented realities is already a factor of life for anybody who uses filters or, you know, on Snap or Snapchat or on Instagram or whatever. So I think augmented reality is going to become more and more a part of the everyday brand experience for a lot of people, you know, virtual try-ons of clothing or eyeglasses. These are kind of the very rudimentary examples of this, but it's going to get sophisticated pretty fast. Because when I look at my students who are in their teens, who join our undergrad program, they want it. Because it's real to them. They want to be able to try products and services and experiences through an augmented reality way, as well as physically in shop. The other thing I think they want is when they tour, they love augmented reality. And they tell me, about, wow, I went to this museum in Toronto and it was amazing because you hold your phone up and a whole world is exposed to you that you can't just see with your eyes when you look at whatever the exhibit is, right? So I think AR, big deal, right? And I think the second thing is really, I would tell communicators, learn about the culture of data, the culture of AI. You don't have to become a computer programmer. You don't have to become a data scientist. Don't be intimidated, right? Read Wired magazine, you know, read MIT Technology Review. I mean, it's a little bit drier, but, you know, it's excellent, right? Read about the tech industry. Just get the language, try to understand the mindset. Because if you don't, I think you're leaving money on the table for you and your team. I think that we kind of, as a profession, we didn't capitalize on social media as much as we could have. I think marketing owned it in a lot of organizations for a whole bunch of reasons that would take a whole other podcast to talk about, so I won't get into it. But I think that we should be really proactive and we should, PR should, and communications management should be at the forefront of this AI revolution that's happening right now.
And is it not only just leaving money on the table, but, you know, to know the nomenclature, to know the trends, you know, to, you know, read, you know, some of these journals or magazines and you know, are you also, you know, at risk of becoming irrelevant because you are not staying on top of these things? So there is a certain urgency to make sure that you are exposed to this, you're reading about it, that you're up on it. Otherwise, you may be left behind and, you know, with what your current skill set is.
I don't want to scare people because I don't think that's fair. Like, I don't want to tell people that if you really don't like this stuff and you're a mid-career senior practitioner and you have a thriving practice right now doing more traditional communications, you're probably going to be okay.
Yeah.
For somebody like that, I would say, don't freak out. Don't worry. But still, read that section of the newspaper, right? When you see something about technology or AI, read it in your favorite business magazine or culture magazine, right? For juniors, 100%, I think you're right. I think for somebody entering the profession, for somebody who's in the first 10 years of their career, hasn't hit management yet, right? You have to know this stuff, right? Otherwise, you risk irrelevance, right? Yeah. Because we're moving, the future is going to look a lot more like an integrated business function for PR, which means that we have to speak the language of business, which is the language of numbers. And so the challenge for the new generation of practitioners, as well as the established generation who are interested in this stuff, right? The challenge is very clear, defining value, right? And then figuring out the metrics and KPIs that capture that value.
Yeah. Well, just a couple last questions that are much simpler than what I've asked you. But one is, what's the name of your book and when it will be released, or if it's already been released?
So we don't have a name yet, because I think that's the last thing that happens. But it'll be basically about putting the AI in PR, something like that. And it's with Martin Waxman. And we hope that it will be out in the next 6 months to a year.
Okay. And do you have a publisher, or will this be through a university press or self-published, or?
It won't be self-published. I can't divulge the publisher.
Oh, yet. Okay, that's fine.
We haven't signed. We have a few irons in the fire because all of a sudden there's interest in this
topic. Yeah.
In a way that there wasn't a couple of years ago, right? But we'll know very soon.
Yeah, no, I think as you noted before, very serendipitous. So my last question we ask every person we interview is just, you know, what gets you up in the morning?
You mean like...
Some people say it's their alarm. Some people say it's their cat, dog. Some people, you know.
Oh, I see. You mean like literally what gets me up?
No, I'm just kidding. I mean, what gets you up in the morning? What are you, passionate about that day in, day out?
Oh, I see. What gets me up in the morning is actually learning about technology. I love technology. I live and breathe technology in a lot of ways. I also love the outdoors. So I go on a long walk every day, sometimes in the forest behind my house. I also like kayaking and hiking in the mountains and by the sea. So I'd say it's nature and technology and my passion for public relations and communications management. I love what I teach. I teach what I love. And every day that I am able to do it is a pleasure and a privilege.
Awesome. Well, Alex, thank you so much for speaking with me. I learned a ton and looking forward to seeing you in Toronto.
I look forward conference. To being there and seeing you too. Yeah, thank you very much for this.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much to Alex. Really enjoyed that conversation. I did want to point out that Alex will be part of a panel at World Conference in Toronto on June 6th, discussing generative artificial intelligence and how communicators can use it effectively. Certainly a hot topic. He'll be joined by Martin Waxman, Dave Felicio Holtz, and Allison Gelada. And thank you, Alex. I really appreciate the conversation and hope you all enjoyed it.